Welcome to another episode of Living an Ultra Life. My name is Mike, and this week we're going to talk a little bit about Tideland's 24-hour race, but more importantly, how Mike decided maybe he doesn't need so much crap at a race. So anyway, Tideland 24-hour, man, I'm telling you what, this was a really neat 24-hour race. The course is just absolutely beautiful. 1.2-ish miles, we'll go, or 1.4-ish miles, I guess it is, just shy of 1.4 miles. And just beautiful. I mean, it's down near Emerald Isle, North Carolina. And so my beautiful forever girlfriend and I decided to make a weekend of it. So we drove down on Friday, just kind of took our time going down and enjoyed not going down I-95. I can't tell you how nice it was to not drive I-95, but to drive 17 all the way down south. It was a great drive. So we took our time getting down there, got down, quickly realized that, hey, this isn't a canopy type of race because the canopy would need to be across the way, but we could go very minimal. So we had a table and we just decided, okay, we're going to put the table out. We're going to put the red chair out and just try to go a little bit more minimal this race. And so we got a nice spot picked out right near the start stop line, right near the aid station, near the indoor potty. We got that all set up. We took off, went to our little tiny house that we had rented. Then we took a walk to the beach. We decided Jenny could take the weekend off crewing and just have a wonderful beach adventure where she was planning on finding all kinds of treasures, and she was planning a beautiful day, and I'll share, you know, some of the pictures when we post this. It was just absolutely gorgeous. My buddy came down Friday evening, and he and I took off early in the morning to get all ready for the race, got our packets all picked up, got our table set up, got our hydration all set up, and everything was just good. And then the start of the race, probably one of my most favorite starts to the race. I mean, we started out with the national anthem. Jason Ledoyen is a phenomenal race director. It's my first time running one of his races, and I'm just going to say Jason Ledoyen is a phenomenal, phenomenal race director. I love the way that the Marine Raiders Foundation is the recipient of the profits. Jason announced at the beginning of the race that they've raised over $35,000 through the years for the Marine Raider Foundation, and I think it's a fantastic cause, so look it up, and if you feel like donating, I'm sure they would be more than happy because they're helping Marine Corps veterans get better situated as they leave the military and begin their civilian careers. And I think that is extremely valuable. This race started with kind of a surprise to me. I did not know this was a tradition, and it was so unbelievably cool. So Jason calls out the name of this young lady who is an active duty Marine, and he announces that she is going to carry the flag the whole 1.4 miles for the first lap. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm looking around. There are some absolute fantastic runners out here. And I'm thinking they're going to trample her. I mean, they're going to go running past her. The entire first loop, this young lady carried the flag, and every single runner, I think there were 108 runners, stayed behind her for the entire first lap. So you're just getting to watch. So it's really a fun course because you can kind of see different angles along the course. I was sort of mid to the back of the pack, and so you can see the flag fluttering in the distance in front of you, and then you take kind of a turn into the course, and you can see it over in the distance, and it was just, I can't even tell you what it felt like, the honor to see our American flag, our symbol of freedom, fluttering in front of all the runners as they stayed behind the flag and honored the flag the first loop. That was probably one of my favorite starts to a race that I've ever had, and just absolutely loved it. The course for Tidelands is very forgiving. It's not technical at all. lot of bridges. So one of the, I think it was like the second or the third bridge, they started calling that the Tideland Knob. And then there's just this little tricky, you get off the bridges and everything, and all of a sudden you start this, it's just a slight incline. But by about the, you know, 10th, 15th time you're at this thing, it feels like a mountain. It feels like, oh my gosh, we're climbing the mountain again. No elevation gain really to speak of, but it was still a lot of fun. It got hot probably around 10 o'clock, which surprised me because looking at the weather reports, it wasn't supposed to get above 71. And around 10 o'clock, man, I started going, whoa, need to slow down. I'm power walking the whole thing because that's my commitment now, is just to power walk. And once again, I was like, in the back of my mind, I was like, okay, let's shoot for 100. I know I can finally get this sub-2400 mile monkey off my back, and I know it's going to happen eventually. And I was like, okay, let's shoot for it. And so I was setting a really good pace, just keeping it between 12 and 13 minute miles the whole time. I changed my watch up a little bit so that I wasn't constantly getting alerts. And so I was only getting an alert at 1 hour and at 4 miles. And I figured as long as I kept everything under a 1 hour or 4 mile, everything would be fantastic. Until around 10 o'clock, actually it was probably around 11 o'clock, everything was under an hour. Then all of a sudden the heat just started getting to me. And I was like, wow, I've already gone through, by this time I'd already emptied my first bladder of water. I carried my pack on this one, so I had a bladder, and then I had one soft flask with my scratch fuel in it, and one soft flask with just scratch electrolyte in it. I was on my third set of scratch bottles, and on the loop right before noon, I think I was right at 12 miles, I drained my bladder, which is a liter and a half bladder. And I drained it. So I was like, wow, I'm sucking through the water. I'm eating well. And I felt good. So I felt really good. No real pain. A little bit discomfort from my left foot because I was not fully recovered from Cape Fear. Cape Fear, I got a pretty nice blister on the ball of my left foot, which was a first for me. The blister hadn't fully popped and done all of its stuff, shed the dead skin and all that stuff. So I was still dealing with a little bit of that, but my forever girlfriend taped it very, very well, and it seemed to work out pretty good. Around, it must have been, I just kept on going, but I slowed way down as the heat kind of set in, and I just was like, okay, I'm not going to go for 100, but I know I can get into the 90s. And so my whole focus was, okay, beat the 92, you got a Cape Fear, and life will be good, or just at least come close to it, which I thought was entirely possible. Somewhere around this time, my buddy caught up to me, and he's like, man, he said, my pee is really dark. And I know normal people don't talk about pee, but ultra runners do. So I was like, how dark are we talking? He's like, near iced tea colored. I was like, dude, that's not good. You need to hydrate. And he was crushing it. He was at this point, probably by 3 o'clock, he was already over 40 miles. I was over 30 miles. So I was doing well. And he was at the 40-ish mile mark. And he just needed to slow down, back it off. So he slowed down, backed it off, actually did a power walk lap with me, which by now my power laps were in the 14 to 15 because I was feeling a little bit of discomfort in my left foot. And I was feeling like I just could never get hydrated. I'm drinking lots of water. By now, by 3 o'clock, I had gone through my sixth and seventh soft flask bottles. I was chugging pickle juice, which I rarely ever do because I don't know where the crampy kind of feeling in my gut kind of came from, but it was just existing there. And this is part of ultra running. You just sort of ignore it, go, okay, address it, slug a little pickle juice. Was eating food well from the aid station. One of my goals was, okay, I need to learn how to go more minimalistic in my 24-hour and 48-hour and 72-hour races. So let's figure out how to go with a little bit less. And so I was maintaining every hour doing my peanut butter packs because I do love me some peanut butter. I don't know what it is about peanut butter, but I do seem to really, really like peanut butter. So the Justin's peanut butter packs have become my gel. A little bit more calories, but it worked out well. So anyway, my buddy slows down. I'm doing 14 to 15, but I'm still figuring, you know, I'm at this point. I'm right on track to be in the 90-ish mile range, knowing that 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. is going to happen and the brain's going to go check out and go. I don't know. I have decided that my brain leaves me about 2 a.m. and goes and checks into a hotel someplace. And I'm not sure what my brain is doing at the hotel, but it certainly isn't with me, because I could tell you a lot about every single race, but please don't ever ask me what happened between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. because I'm not really there. So I'm like prepared for all that, knowing that I'm probably going to be doing my typical weaving like a drunk around, you know, between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. and all this stuff. And all of a sudden my buddy catches back up to me and he walks with me and he went a little bit further and he pulls off the path, you know, just enough to take a pee. And as I come around the corner, I kind of see the liquid and it's past the dark stage. It's like bright red. And I'm like, oh, crap, you're done, dude. I said, I am not taking you to the hospital. So you're done. That's it. We get back to the start-finish line and I grab our really good friend James and I'm like, dude, you need to talk to James, because James is as close to like a coach, mentor in ultra running as I can imagine. I trust him a lot and he's going to advise you. So I go out for another loop. I come back. They've talked it over with a medical person and the medical person said, I would recommend stopping. So he stopped. He very wisely stopped. I was like, okay, I got one more loop to go get 40 miles. And at 10 hours and 15 minutes, I stopped at 41 miles and called it a day, which actually was not a bad idea, because my forever girlfriend was in our little tiny house in Emerald Isle. And so my buddy and I get back to the house. He gets a good rest and then he takes off and drives home, and we didn't have to go to the hospital, which was very good. And so I got to spend all day Sunday with my forever girlfriend. We went and walked on the beach early in the morning and picked up shells and just spent time talking. And then we decided we wanted to eat breakfast. So we went and found a place down the road somewhere in Emerald Isle to eat breakfast, looking at the beach, just enjoying ourselves. We even went over and thought we'd go to the aquarium, but then we found out that you had to have tickets prior, so we canceled that. We just drove around. We just had a fantastic time together. We ate together. We had coffee together. We just wandered around and looked at the island together. It was just a peaceful, beautiful, incredible day. And I have a treat for you. So here is my lovely, fantastic, vivacious, forever girlfriend, Jenny Horner.
Hi, guys. Great to be with you again. Mike started the podcast by talking about getting rid of some of the crap, or not having so much crap, or something about crap. And he was referring to the cases and cases of food and clothes and shoes and stuff that we have lugged to every race and then lugged back home, mostly unused from every single race. And I am very proud of him. He did this race beautifully, minimally, and he even realized that he didn't even need everything that he had with him. So kudos to Mike on reducing the crap. And I just wanted to add one other little note. I know that it's not something that the males in the running sport think about a lot, but a lot of females do not enjoy staying in strange places by themselves in isolated areas. Well, when I booked this tiny house, I thought, oh, it's on a beach. There'll be a million of people around and everything will be good. I'll thoroughly enjoy myself. And we got to the tiny house and the main house in front of it was under construction. It was all ripped apart. The tiny house was way in the back. There were no neighbors because they were all vacation rentals. And I was a little flustered by that. I've stayed by myself a million times in a lot of different countries. I know in my head that I am taken care of. I know in my heart that I am taken care of. It does not mean that I am comfortable and sleep well when I'm by myself in a random weird place with no other humans around. This is just a tip for those of you who are like, oh, it'll be like a vacation. Come along, honey. You can stay in the mountain lodge by yourself with no other humans around you because every other human is running the race or crewing the people. But you'll love being up there in that mountain lodge all by yourself. That was another one of our adventures. Anyway, just a little tip for ultra runners who are very, very, very focused on their art. Just remember, if you do have a significant other, they have some needs as well. Great talking to you. Hope to see you again next week.
There you go. See, a little treat. You get a little bit of Jenny, the forever girlfriend, who always has something very succinct to say, and it's really good at this for some reason. Maybe I should let her do the podcast from now on. Who knows? Anyway, Tideland 24 was a success, even though, you know, my ultra signup score really stunk. You know, I mean, they gave me a 37% on it, and if I was really hung up on my ultra signup score, I'd be really bummed right now. But I'm not really hung up on my ultra signup score because, you know what? I did the right thing by my friend, by my beautiful wife, by myself, because guess what? My body wasn't ready to do another 24-hour at that time. So now it is time to recover completely and get ready for the next adventure, which is across the years, 72-hour, out in Peoria, Arizona, over New Year's Eve. That's going to be a blast. And somebody said, you mean your wife's not going with you? I was like, no, she's not very good at traveling over the holidays, and she'd be pretty much by herself for 72 hours. So I decided this is going to be a solo juncture where Mike goes out and attempts to be very minimal, do most of his nutrition from the aid stations, because from what I've heard, Aravipa does a fantastic job with the aid stations, and I'm looking forward to their chefs feeding me for 72 hours. It's going to be a blast. And so I'm just getting everything ready. And of course, then after that is Swami Shuffle. And then I haven't really decided what's after Swami Shuffle, but I have a feeling we're going to go back to Tideland 24 next year because I'm just really entranced by how Jason started the race. That was probably one of the best starts to an ultra marathon that I have experienced in my 10 years of running ultra marathons. And I'm a big fan of anything we do for our veterans. I think the more we can help our veterans who have sacrificed a huge part of their lives, the more we can do to honor them, not just with a day, but with the way that we live our lives and honor them on an everyday basis. Thank you, veterans, for everything you do, not just on Veterans Day, but on every other day. And that, folks, will do it for another episode of Living an Ultra Life.